update your home and save big money with Mastercraft Doors at Menards. For over 50 years, Mastercraft has been making quality doors inside and out. Choose from the best in-stock selection of interior and exterior doors ready to take home today. Or design your door your way with our free designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on Mastercraft Doors and check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Social Flight is brought to you by Aspen Avionics, Avidyne, Continental Aerospace Technologies, Lightspeed Aviation, Tempest Aero Group, and Whip Air. And now, here's your host, Jeff Simon.
Welcome to Cockpit to Cal, the show that explores general aviation safety topics from the combined perspective of flight instructors, pilots, and mechanics, exploring both pilot and aircraft topics to make aviation safer and more enjoyable. I'm Jeff Simon, pilot AMP/IA and president of Social Flight. And right next to me in person here for the first time, I'm so excited about this, is Brian Schiff.
Yeah, this is very cool having you here. I'm a 40-year flight instructor, Gold Seal, and I fly big airplanes on the side to help support my habits. And Jeff, I can't tell you how exciting it is to have you here in person, not just looking at you on the monitor.
I know, it's the same for me. And you and I have had some crazy travel over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Let's see. I flew to South Carolina to bring an airplane down there that they see Ben down there, then went to down to Clemson, then went, dropped it off, getting air conditioning in Tennessee at AC Services, from there to Autopilot Place, from there down to Continental for their 120th anniversary. You're going to see video coming out on that 120th anniversary down there with the factory, some pretty cool things we'll talk about happening down with them. And now here, the highlight of everything.
You made it here.
And during that time, you were all the way up in Alaska.
I was up at the Great Alaska Aviation Gathering, gave a webinar or a seminar, in-person seminar on four flight workshops. I love going up there. It's I have a lot of friends up there, and hello to you guys who are watching, and you know who you are. Had a great time up there and all over the place. My real job takes me obviously all over. I've been to Seattle, LA, where else? Sacramento. You know, I pretty much get around, and it's back here and then to see you.
You're used to the travel and the sleep deprivation. For me, you're coaching me through it.
I don't know any other way. Just keep on moving.
Well, today we are here to talk about spring, which has sprung down here because you're going to be about 100 degrees tomorrow. But for those of us in the northern climates, it's a new concept that it's now we're not scraping snow off. So we actually are experiencing spring.
That's awesome.
I'm going to learn from you about the flying aspect of it. We'll chat a bit about the maintenance aspect of spring. So that's today's topic.
Yeah, with the change in the seasons comes more than just change in the temperature and the weather. It's the change in the way we operate our aircraft, for sure.
Yeah,
we'll have some good stuff.
Very, very cool things. One other quick housekeeping note before we get started. Our program is sponsored by all the companies that are back that you see back here, and we appreciate everything that you do to at least give them a chance to earn your business. They're all wonderful companies. I know Avemco Insurance is just there. We love those guys.
Those are the most wonderful people. They've been so supportive, and their hearts are in safety. And I know that they have a motivation for not having accidents, but so do we. We all have a motivation not to have an accident. I think that's the most important thing of everything we talk about, is how to keep from crashing an airplane and to enjoy what we're doing and keep it safe.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
And
so.
Mark, shout out to Marcy and Megan over there. If you use the word social flight, that you will get a 5% discount with them. So check that out. They'll be able to do that. And also, Aspen just came out with this cool promo. And you know, I fly behind Aspen Glass in front. They've got one to add a multifunction display, an MFD.
Oh, wow.
And they've got some crazy deals right now if you're looking to add. And I did that. I went from my primary single glass display to the second one. And I can tell you on these cross-country trips,
Yeah.
that's making a huge difference
I can
for me.
imagine. I mean, I look at your panel and I look at a Garmin panel and I look at yours. It just, everything is so much more intuitive. I love the buttons. I love the way the Aspens feel. I just think you can't beat it.
Yeah, so Aspen Avidyne's what I fly behind, but it's helped me with long range planning. So anyway, let's move on to
You've been doing a lot
the
of long range flying.
topic.
And you got some flying to do
Got something
tomorrow,
on
too.
tomorrow too. So I'll be going, yeah, from Dallas to Boston tomorrow in a Bonanza. That'll be a long trip.
Yeah, nonstop, right?
Yes.
Yes, you
Yeah,
can do that.
no.
Yeah, just lean it, way lean a peak, and you got to,
Yes,
yeah, got to make
exactly. A little bit of gliding along the way.
Right.
So Brian, I want to start by
Yeah.
asking you, what is the first thing that comes to mind with you when I say
Cookies.
spring flying?
The first thing that comes to mind with spring flying is obviously a change in the weather and the way that the airplane is going to behave in that and what we need to do to keep our airplane safe. I think, things like density altitude, I think things like wind, I think convection. So we see the weather and then I think of the tire pressure in my airplane. The first thing I think, like just like my car, sometimes I get the low tire pressure in the winter when it turns from summer to winter and everything cools down. So I think things like that, just all the normal things that change. I think of birds in the cowling. I think of bugs. I think of all kinds of things that go bump in the night.
I mean that's really, I think, some of the big
Yeah.
topics. There seem to be two types of things that come up when we think about moving from winter into spring. One of them is, I think, pretty well covered. You do some wonderful presentations on knocking the rust off and rusty pilots
Yeah.
webinars. And so it's the idea of not flying a lot to going to flying a lot. But I think one of the ones that doesn't get as much attention is how quickly the way that you fly and the issues you encounter change. Because we
Yeah.
go from this kind of stable, cool air,
Yeah.
no worries about convective stuff, and
Yeah.
usually kind of not as many people flying, at least in the northern latitudes.
That's true. Traffic is a big thing. Everybody comes out of their hibernation and starts flying, especially in certain areas where the weather is too prohibitive or icy in the winter time. So traffic is another thing. I know on my airplane it runs I can't get it warmed up in the winter, so we've put a plate on the oil cooler. So I know it's time to remove that. And we've got manual cowl flaps I got to move and things like that. And I'll, check in light bulbs, all the things that might have sat for a while. In fact, light bulbs, you helped me fix a light bulb, didn't we?
I did. Yeah,
Yes, we
you want to
did.
show something about our little activities today? Share a little bit.
Yeah, I think we should do that. Let's see. So we were out at the airplane today and after it was a little windy, as you can see by the hairdo that's going on. And Jeff did a beautiful job, taxiing this airplane. And this was lesson one for, getting a T-51
This is
feet alive, so
we're getting closer. It's time to learn how to fly that
2 weeks, right? It's going to be ready.
Yeah, it's going to be one version of 2 weeks.
One version of 2 weeks. So we went up and we took the Satabria for a flight and Jeff did a great job. He also got his hand deep into my wing, almost elbow deep there working
You
on
told me you
it.
needed some help here. I was either birthing a calf or I was helping you with your strobe.
Yeah, it was one of the two. Yeah, again, lights, the temperature change, these lights don't seem to like that too much. And so Jeff just jumps right in and he's helping out like a true friend.
And
Speaking of
we
light
proved
bulbs,
something. All right,
yes.
talking about folks on the board here, UAvionics behind me. So we've been trying to figure out how to get UAvionics Tail Beacon X installed on a Satabri and on fabric aircraft where you've got a very, very narrow rudder, but you still have a light and ones that still have a light. Everyone kept saying it's not possible,
Yes,
right?
everybody told me I took it to many places. It's not possible. And Jeff's like, let me see that.
Give me some tool.
Yeah.
We made it. It got it to work.
Yeah, we got it to work. The UAvionics Tail Beacon X is in. It fits. You can see it's in place. I'm going to go find a radio shop and have that installed. And I'm going to have the UAvionics transponder to go with the AV30s. And we're going to make some great videos. I'm going to have some training videos on using those as well. If you have those, I really do like it. They do some neat things, and neat things coming with them as well.
You know what we found is so interesting is because the rudders are so narrow, the idea that I think a lot of shops have, and even you, avionics, said they're not familiar with exactly how to get it in sometimes. You've got a steel ring that is part of the aft edge of the rudder. That's where you put in your normal tail light or strobe, whatever you've got going on there. And everyone seemed concerned about how it might spread the fabric out.
Right. I was
And
told that it would the box that goes into the rudder, my rudder's so narrow that it would be pushing out on the fabric.
So here's what we found. Here's the reality of it. The ring itself is a bit of an issue getting it through. You do have to modify that just a little bit, you know, file open space for it because you've got this rectangular piece that goes in. But actually, the part that goes in from U avionics to tailbeginx that actually goes slides into the tail is narrower.
It was narrower than the round navigation
Yeah.
light fixture that went
They had the
through.
fabric kind of bowed out around the original round one, and this goes in smoother.
And it doesn't
So,
bow now.
for those of you
So,
who you know who are considering that, it is doable.
and the takeaway for me is when a mechanic tells you something can't be done,
Never believe
never believe. Not
them.
that, but get a second opinion. You'll find someone that you know that cares. Because mechanics just may not want to tackle that. It might say, no, Matt, that's not doable. We can't do that. And that may not always be the case. So just like in medical, I think getting a second opinion is always good advice.
I think when it comes to modifications to aircraft, and this is a modification, when it comes to the modifications, there's categories and sliding scales. I'm not talking about the legal terms of major versus minor, but in the grand scheme of things, there are shops that really just need to make their bread and butter plugging things in and taking things out, and they don't want to overhaul mags themselves or get deep into anything. They just need to plug something in, take it out, and keep their business going, which to their
I
understanding, they
understand
may
it.
have to do that. Then there's minor alterations, which is what we are, you know, are working on. In the minor alteration realm, that's something where you really should be able to find a shop that's willing to do minor alterations and work with you. And then, of course, there's going to be things that go major and go much further, where it's either going to be possible or it's not going to be possible economically, right? Because I mean, heck, you could put a, you know, automotive engine in a plane. It's just a severe
That
major
would be a big
alteration that you may or may not
difference.
ever get through the FAA. So anything's possible with the right wallet and patience. But things like this, you got to find someone who's willing to dig in, roll up their sleeves, and at least try.
I had given up, and so it was nice to see that.
So
Lesson. Spring
spring
flying,
flying. One of the things we found today, it has to do with weather and wind. Tell me a little bit about what changes when things warm up.
Well, when things warm up and when there's a high gradient in the pressure, that you see a lot of that, high gradient. So the isogonic lines or the isobars, I should say, not the isogonic lines. The isobars are closer together. You get more wind, and when we have more, air masses changing, you get where we were getting the polar land air that's dry and cold, then we get the subtropical air coming from the Gulf or from south. It comes up, it's humid, and these air they clash, they mix. We get instability, and we get more winds like we had today. One of the things that I like to cover is a good rule of thumb for crosswind component calculation. And if you've seen me talk that I've given this before, it's the 579 rule. I charge $5.70 for it. With inflation, I should probably charge more, but it's basically, pilots shouldn't be doing trigonometry while they're flying. And basically, the cosine of certain angles are 5 and then 7 and then 9 or 50, 70, 90. So if we take the winds that we care about, I know that if I have a wind that's right down the runway at 0 degrees to the runway, that 100% of that is headwind. There's 0% of it is crosswind. So we know that if we have a wind coming from 90 degrees, that 100% of it is going to be crosswind. So there are a few angles in between that I like to memorize. 30 degrees, 45, and 60. Those are kind of
I
cardinal
can remember those.
angles. So at each of those angles, if you remember 579, so if the wind is 30 degrees from the runway, 0.5 of the wind, half of the wind is crosswind. At 45 degrees, 70% of the wind is crosswind. At 60 degrees, 90% is Crosby. It goes up exponentially because
That's
of
cool. I didn't know
mass.
that.
Yeah, so 579, 50% of the wind is crosswind, wind speed
579.
at 30 degrees. 70% of the wind is crosswind at 45 degrees, and 90% of the wind is crosswind at 60 degrees. You
That's
know, 0 and 90,
yeah.
but those are the in-between ones. The one you see most often is 30 degrees off the runway. Half your wind is crosswind component.
That's crazy. I would have
Yeah.
thought, 45, just I was just,
You'd think that would be half. It's not the half because math.
Yeah, because of
Yeah.
math.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, good. Yeah, math's good now.
Right.
All
Exactly.
right, so we've got that, and I know now we have to start thinking also. One of the things, and tell me if this is correct, but this is my what kind of my gut experience is that at least in New England up there in the winter, you tend to have weather that in itself is more stable, meaning you can see it, you know if it's coming in, you've got time to plan for it if that's happening. It tends to be a little slower and whatever. The summer seems to me, in my experience, that you get a lot of pop-up weather. Things where it's not a cell that you saw and that came from there to there, where you're drawing lines and saying, I have 30 minutes before this gets here or whatever like that. But instead, it just develops. Is that accurate?
Yeah, in the wintertime with warm fronts or the cool fronts that we get in the winter, you can see them coming from far away. It's a big mass, it's stable. You don't get there's things called the K index that you can look at if you want to look that up. I'm not going to explain it because I'm not mathy enough to know that. But I do know that there are indexes to show the instability of the air, but in the wintertime the air is less. Is not as unstable. It's much more stable. So you get into the summertime flying, we get lift, we get, to make a thunderstorm, it takes moisture, heat, and lift. And with the instability, we get more lift. And there are certain atmospheres that are more prone to just pop-up weather. That's why you'll hear almost all summer long in the southern United States, with exception of like on the southwest coast, is that, 30% chance of thunderstorms. So because of that instability, and you can't really forecast where the thunderstorm is going to pop up. One thing that 30% chance of rain means, it doesn't mean that it's either going to 70% chance of not rain and 30% chance it does rain. But what it does mean is that 30% of the area has 100% chance of rain.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
So they just don't know where. Somewhere in that area, the terminal area, which is like a 30
There's
mile
going to be
radius.
rain 30% of the space. I never thought about
30% of
that
it
way.
is 100% chance of rain. There will be rain. We just can't say where. Now, when a warm front comes in, the wintertime, like you're saying, it's a big stable air mass coming and we see it coming. And all of a sudden, here's the line. We know it's going to be here at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And when the winds shift, we know the front passed. Another good
That's
rule of
cool.
thumb I like to give, and we know that the weather generally comes from west to east, generally speaking, sometimes southwest. But I like to tell my, and I tell all my students this, with the wind at your back, the weather's to your left. And I can explain why in a longer program. But basically, if the wind is out of the south and you're standing facing north, wind's at your back, the weather's to your left, it's on its way here. And if you turn around and face south with the wind at your back,
So why doesn't it follow the wind exactly?
what's that?
Why doesn't it follow the wind
It
exactly?
likes
Why
to
isn't
sneak up on you. So that's why wind at
it?
your back. No, it doesn't follow. Well, because the wind direction changes. The whole air mass might be moving this way. Ground friction changes the direction of the wind.
Got it.
And now in today's airplanes, it's really cool that you can take off and you can look at a wind vector as you're climbing and you can just see it spinning around. I wanted to get a time lapse video at work where I'm climbing from 0 to 35,000 feet. And the first, 10,000 feet, you can watch that wind barb just changing as I climb and
Oh, wow.
changing this way as I descend if I were to get a time lapse. Yeah.
That is cool. I'm gonna go check that
The
out.
wind.
And you can do that, of course, on any of the, aviationweather.gov or any of the
Right.
other sites that you use or tools that you use in your
Yeah.
iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. There's a story I wanted to relay to you that happened to me having to do with that type of sneak up weather many years ago. And this was, I think, sort of before weather was in the, big time everywhere in the cockpit.
Yeah.
Certainly well before, long before ADS-B. I was flying a Grumman at the time, and I was coming into the Boston area, and I remember I was on talking to approach control, and it was hazy and hot and sort of late in the day, and there was a line of crummy weather. I didn't see lightning in it, but it was a good line of crummy weather, and I was talking to air traffic control, and they kept saying, that go south down towards Rhode Island and get around it because they said everything's fine on the other side of it. And
Okay.
they're like, it's okay, we're not showing anything behind it, right? And that was my destination, right? So it's the classic trap.
Yeah.
You are here, you want to go there, and in between you and there is weather.
Right.
And they are saying, like, clear around, and here's how you get around it.
Yeah.
And we went south, we went south, we started getting a lot of pressure to turn around. We didn't quite see where to turn.
It wasn't
It
clear behind you, I'm
wasn't looking
guessing.
really clear.
Yeah.
And so I got a lot of, because you're switching sectors and they really want to keep you in their sector,
Yeah.
So anyway, turned, got behind it where they said it was. And I'll tell you,
Yeah.
all of Boston went convective like that.
Oh, wow.
The whole region
Yeah.
where you get late in the day and it's hazy and things kind of got that color in the air,
Yeah.
the brownish, and then all of a sudden, and so that left me with this lesson that I love to pass on to anyone else, that it, especially in the summer, it can just happen.
Yeah. It can. And also with the old radar, now we have the NEXRAD, which puts a bunch of different radar pictures together. But back then, attenuation was a big problem. And especially if you had onboard radar, you'd say, oh, look, right behind the cell, it's perfectly clear. Well, the radar was shadowing behind the cell.
True,
Ground
true.
radar would do that too when you were only looking at one point. But when you have all the other sights painting the whole picture, it's a lot easier. But yeah, summers are more unstable. Expect pop-ups. Expect where it was good weather to go to get worse, for
So
sure.
let's talk about one other thing, and that is our little fair weather friends that pop up in the terms of wildlife
Ooh,
and bugs, the ones I
yes.
hate the most,
Yeah.
right?
Which bugs do you hate the most?
The ones that get stuck in
Yeah.
my fuel tanks, if it's stuck in my pedo tube,
Those,
in my
oh,
static ports,
yeah.
bugs.
So first of all, it's important to keep all those holes plugged and covered. I have covers on my pitot tube, the air vent for the fuel line as well. So I saw a funny thing while we're talking about this. This was a story I saw on Facebook, and this guy posted a picture, I think it was Facebook, some social media, of his wing, and the wing looked, the sun was coming from the side, and the wing was all wrinkled, and it looked like it was just being squeezed in and
Start to
scavenged.
see the skeleton.
Yeah, you
It's
can see this.
becoming, your wings are becoming
Yeah.
emaciated.
Like someone who is as skinny as you could see its bones.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Right,
Total lie, but thanks.
right, right. So he posted it while he was flying, and everybody was answering, land, land,
Yeah,
land now,
like immediately.
immediately, because he was, like the fuel air vent, the air that has to get in to take place of the fuel that's being sucked out of the tank, just like the air at the top of a straw when you get your liquid out and cover it with your thumb, and but you get a vapor lock. That's what he was having, and it was suctioning in on the wing. Obviously, it was an aircraft with a wet wing, and I forget what it was, but
A lot of people don't realize how strong fuel pumps are, right? When you're designing an aircraft, it is important that you are designing A to feed the engine and B to overcome obstacles that could happen, temporary small blockages, things like that. So they're over-designed for the job. And what they will do if they don't have the air to replace the space that as you use the fuel, is they will really start sucking down everything. Now, if you happen to have an aircraft with fuel bladders, then you're not going to see this happening until it's too late, right? It's going to be ripping off from all the string or the cord or the snaps that are used inside. And if you have a rigid tank, then you're okay a little bit, and then it'll start to damage the tank. But if you have a wet wing, I remember years ago, I knew someone that had a Grumman and had this happen, that the vent was plugged, they were flying along, and they didn't react in time, and it will crush the ribs. It will not just pull in a little bit, it will keep going, and it will damage those ribs, and you can destroy a wing.
I can imagine. Then when it doesn't have the strength to keep pulling everything in, now the fuel just gets locked.
Right.
Can't get to the engine. I had no idea. So the bladder, I would just expect the bladder to just shrink down to
Oh, it will, but it
like an
will
IV
eat
tube,
it.
it just doesn't.
It'll do that, but it's bladders are attached, so
Okay.
they have ways. You don't want a bladder to shrink all the way down and expand all the way up, because it may not expand to
Oh,
fill the
that makes
rest of the
sense.
cavity.
Yeah.
And so, when you install a fuel bladder, we're going to be doing one soon with Eagle fuel cells on the Bonanza,
Oh, cool.
and you do that in the case of the Bonanza with snaps. They are on the outside. They're put in. So you
So
picture
it
the
would be
tank.
good for pilots to see this, I think, to
Yeah.
understand what's happening, because I picture a bladder
Put
and
an article out.
that
Yes.
would be a good idea.
Yes.
So I have no idea what that
So
looks like.
imagine this like rubber tank, and then on the outside of it, you have webbing that is put into it that's very tight up against the tank. So you obviously don't want to deal with, ruin the integrity of the tank. You don't want a snap that's part of the tank. So in the webbing, you put these snaps through grommets and you pop them up into these all the different holes around. And that's how you keep the tank in place. Some tanks have little areas where you put lacing through it and then you pull the lacing and that holds it up. There's different techniques for doing this. But at the end of the day, the problem is if you suck that down, you're going to unsnap all the stuff that you needed the biggest basketball player on the home high school team to install that with you. And that's the trick, by the way. That's the trick for anyone who's doing bladder work. It's always don't even start the job until you've identified the tallest and most capable basketball player
That's
on your
funny.
home
So
high school
why did we
team.
go from like a metal tank in the wing to say a bladder? Why did we go from it? What's the advantage?
That thing that I just said is one, you can replace them. You can replace them. People may complain about doing it, but it's really not that hard in relative. What's hard is the basketball player thing, right? You need really long arms and you need to get to certain things and put the snaps in. But
Like your
aside,
arm in my wing today.
I didn't even get close.
I don't think my arm could go as far into the wing as yours did.
Yes. So, yes, that's the reason there's many. It's also weight, it's also the ability to handle and get into different cavity spaces. You'll see many of them that have very unique shapes. So they're really, really cool. We'll be doing a lot more on bladders in the future because with unleaded fuel coming, you're going to see a lot more bladder replacements. So get ahead of the curve.
Oh, more on that
Yeah,
later, I
yeah, yeah. So
expect.
back to spring, back to spring. One of the so tell me a little bit more. What else do you want to look for flying? Things having to do with flying. Then we'll get into
Well, I
maintenance.
think one of the biggest things that, your airplane's not going to perform the way that it did before. First of all, with a good wind, I flew with a student one time, and it was like 10 knot headwind. We started climbing up, and the thing was, the airplane at 152, back when I could fit in one, was like climbing at like 800 feet a minute. He goes, "Wow, this thing really climbs well." I said, "Well, we had 10 knots on the ground, and that there's a gradient, because I can tell up here we're getting a lot more wind, because you look down and we're moving backwards. But we are flying into a increasing gradient headwind, which can give you a false sense
Yeah,
of,
that doesn't last, right?
no, it doesn't. It gives you a false sense of extra performance. Fly your airspeeds no matter what. You might get a better rate of climb while you're climbing into that shearing headwind. With the wind gradient as well. But along with that, and I think most importantly, is temperature and density altitude. We have way too many accidents where someone just went into a high elevation airport a few months ago, and the airplane did great with four people on board. Went to Reno with four people in my 172, and it was fine. We went skiing, i.e. winter and cold. Now we're going to go there for the summer and go boating. Guess what? That airplane's going to feel like a whole different airplane at that altitude. So density altitude is, the airplane doesn't know what elevation it's at. It doesn't know the temperature. All it knows is how much air. And I think you probably know a lot about, and could explain better than I could, how much air it needs with the, how much fuel to make a combustion to make power. Well, it's not getting as much air. And the air is a lot thinner, and it's going to behave as though it's at a much higher altitude than Reno, because if it's warmer than standard temperature, the density altitude is obviously going to be higher. I think most of us know that, high to, higher temperatures, high, hot, humid, and we get more humidity because we're getting tropical air. Humidity does play a factor in density altitude as well. It's a small one, but it does. So a good rule of thumb that I teach is, remember, the airplane, like, could you take off? Reno's at, I don't remember what it's at. Let's just say you're at an airport that's 4,000 feet and it's much hotter. It's summertime now, and say it's 70 or 80 degrees. You wouldn't think it's that hot. But for that elevation, it's so much higher than what would be standard temperature at that altitude. So you're a big difference. The airplane density altitude, the actual airplane might think, and engine, that the airplane is at like 8 or 9,000 feet. So think about your airplane, how well it climbs. Even in the winter, when you're up at 8 or 9,000 feet. So a good rule of thumb that I give for that is, basically, at sea level, we know that standard temperature Fahrenheit is 59 degrees. So I teach For every degree, and this is a good rule of thumb, and it's not mine, there's a lot of people out there know it, but if you haven't heard it, it's a great one. For every degree Fahrenheit above standard, add 60 degrees, some sorry, 60 feet to your field elevation to get density altitude. So if you're at sea level and it's 69 degrees, it's 10 degrees above standard, right? 59 is standard, 69 would be 10 degrees. So 10 times 60 is 600 feet, and your density altitude there would be 600 feet. Again, not a big deal, but you could be up at, say, a mountain airport at 6 or 7,000 feet, where the standard temperature, would be close to in the teens,
That
and
makes a lot of sense.
you could be 50 degrees warmer than standard. So you're starting at 5,000 feet, and you've 50 times 60 is 3,000 feet difference. So now you're really at 8,000 feet. Good rule of thumb. Of course, we got calculators all over our devices and stuff now. It's easy. And even ForeFlight will tell you, and other EFB apps and navigation apps where you get the weather. They'll actually say the density
Yeah, they'll
altitude
tell you.
right there. So just pay attention to it. And remember, look in your books, your performance manual, to see, okay, what is the time to climb at 9,000 feet? How much runway is required at 9,000 feet, even though I'm at 5,000 foot elevation airport? Airplane's going to fly like it's at 9,000. So remember, for performance, you've got to look up density altitude. And a lot of manuals don't say that.
The other thing which really surprised me once in the past was humidity, the effect of humidity. I have always paid attention to temperature and had flown at the same kind of like hot day in the plane loaded with people, and I knew how it performed. And so then I went out, and there was one where it was really particularly humid that day, same temperature, and that I was used to. And I was absolutely shocked at the performance difference. It concerned me that I wasn't getting the performance, and the only difference was that humidity.
Humid air you'd think is heavier and thicker, but it's not. The water takes up room that the air otherwise would be, and so humid air is less dense. It's
Yeah, and
a but
it affected the engine power, and it also affects, of course, density altitude for going
Absolutely.
out
I
of
saw someone
range and
from
all the
Reno
other
said hello there, 4,415 feet. Sean,
things.
thanks for that. I was thinking around 4,400 feet, but when I don't want to commit to memory, but that, yeah, so 4,400 feet at Reno. And somebody I think might have posted, what's the actual temperature there? And when it's warm, look at that density altitude. And when you go to your takeoff charts, don't use 4,400 feet, use your density altitude. A lot of books, again, don't tell you that.
One of the things that people don't necessarily intuitively realize is that the power of our engines, our ability to design an engine to make power, is often limited by air intake. It's not fuel. It's
Oh,
not
is that
hard.
right?
It's not hard to put more fuel into a cylinder, right? It comes out in a tiny little nozzle. You want to put more, you put more. That's not what restricts engine cylinder design when it comes to power. Now, of course, there's things we need to worry about, like detonation and all the other things, so we won't talk about compression ratios and all that. But the biggest thing that the engine designers are always focused on is that how do I breathe better? How do I get more air into the cylinders? And that's why they're always like, how big can I make, this valve? How can I put multiple valves per cylinder? Can I do other things to get it in? And that's why you turbocharge, you compress air,
Have
you do all
more
the
air into it, yeah.
supercharge, like anything. It's always about breathing.
Yeah.
It's always about breathing. And so that's why when we start thinking about temperature, when we start thinking about humidity, that's what's going to really kill
It's
engine
how much
power.
air you can. I know that if I'm up at like 10,000 feet, we drove the Continental Divide one time, got out of the car and tried to hike up a little bit. It was all about air. I was definitely not getting
Well, think
cold.
about it with carb heat, right? You put carb heat on, massive change. I've had people before go, oh, it's bringing it from a different source. It's not, you don't get that much ram air.
No, it's your
I've done experiments with ram air and things like
warm
that.
air there.
That's
You're
not, it's the
proving it.
temperature, right?
You're proving it right there. And I've seen people check their carb heat right after engine start, and it's like, it's not working. Yeah, it's not being heated yet.
Exactly.
Gotta
That
have a
works
warmer
well.
engine. I lost my train of thought.
Well, let's talk a
That's
little bit about the other thing that's cool about this time of year, right? We are now, we just finished with Mother's Day.
I
So now
remember
we
what I
can
was gonna
start.
say.
Oh, yeah, you want to tell me?
Sorry. It's pertinent to what we're talking about. Looking in the holes of the airplane, the pitot tube, the static ports, even on a sunny day, arguably especially on a sunny day, have a flashlight, good bright flashlight to look in these holes and look for bugs. I saw another picture talking about air intake of a bird's nest on the inside, like right in the carburetor air inlet. And the bird was, there's a bird nest in there. I mean, that's definitely going to inhibit some airflow. So,
Wow.
yeah, cover that stuff up. And then even still look in those things. That's what
Absolutely.
I had. I'm sorry.
Good, good.
Yeah.
We're good.
All right.
Well, so we just finished with Mother's Day. Now that means we can look forward now to Father's Day, which usually means washing and waxing things, or if you have older kids that are going to be visiting or nearby, you tell them that that's what you want, your airplane washed and waxed. That kind of leads us into that idea. Let's chat about that for a
Yeah,
minute.
that was a big deal when I bought the airplane because I used to just pay people to wash it. And now I'm like, I want to clean it myself. I want to get out there, get my hands on it. I think there's no better way to see a flaw in your airplane and know what flaws are there than to be cleaning your airplane. But I didn't know what am I supposed to wipe on this airplane? What's going to hurt it? What's not going to hurt it?
Well, let's start with the windshield and your glass, because this is the thing that I see people I hesitate to say kind of like doing the wrong things, but let's say risky behavior. The things that I consider to be a little bit risky. Your aircraft glass is, and it's such a pain to replace. We have to do whatever we can to preserve it, right?
For me, it's writing a check, but that's expensive to replace.
And it can ruin your paint when it gets replaced, even if you're comfortable writing the check, right? There's a lot to it, and so you really want to protect your glass. And the safest way to do that is either use water or an abundant amount of a plastic safe cleaner, like a Plexi. There's like a million of
Yeah,
them.
I'm
If they're
afraid of having like stripes and even the dirt. I feel like the dirt could scratch, couldn't it? Is that why you
Yeah,
say the
very much. That's why I say, like, it's again, either water, start with either water or a huge amount of whatever's in the spray can that is made for aircraft glass, made for plexiglass. Soak it down. And then the best tool you can use, I swear, the best tool you can use are these two thumb ones.
Really?
Now, if you're wearing a ring, you got to remove that. Don't do
So,
the
will you be
cooking
willing to
with
leave those here with me so I can watch?
I will.
Okay.
Boom, they're yours. So I'm serious.
Yeah,
You
just use your hands.
use your hands. When it is totally wet, let it soak in a little bit, and then just gently go. You will feel, never use a fingernail to pull something off. Don't do anything that could scratch. You will feel it loosening up bugs, other things, other
Interesting.
debris, and like letting it. You'll get to feel what that's like. Then, when you're done, when you've kind of felt that you've loosened some things up and smooth, and you can feel intuitively that you've got this smooth surface going, then you spray a little more on, and at that point, you go
Where are
in
we going to
a
find the little more?
microfiber towel.
I don't. Sorry.
Nice, nice.
I know one that lives a few doors. Okay.
Then, all right, fine. Then you do that, and
Okay.
you wipe it down with a microfiber towel.
Yeah.
Go in circles and get everything off after that point. That's
So
what I do.
tell me this. Am I nuts for using? So I have three colors of microfiber towels, and I only use one of them on the oil or the belly. I only use the other one on the main part of the fuselage or the interior, and then the third one, the blue ones, I use on the window. And I'll only do that. I mean, I hate to wipe something solid or dirt that would be on that and doesn't come out when I
I
clean
gotta
it.
be honest, I take it one step further than that. So you're right.
Yeah,
That's a great method of doing things.
okay.
I will say I go one step further because they're just not that expensive. And so I will get a pack, one of those like 25 or 50
And you just
packs,
throw them
which are
out.
like 10 bucks. No, I cycle them down what you just described. That
Oh, okay.
cycle of
So
what you use
window
for. So
first.
for me,
Okay.
I will only use either new or one that I've used on the glass that visibly just really is pristine. It has nothing. Like I used it for my second wipe, not my first wipe, but like the second wipe I just described or something like that. And when in doubt, I always just go to the pack. This is only for windshield side windows. That's it. Everything
That
else,
makes
you can
sense.
do all sorts of things. But what
Yeah,
I
see,
have
I told
found,
you, honey.
what I found is that your washing machine just doesn't take out the embedded grit. If you really are getting grit
Right, that's what I was
It's just
afraid
not
of.
taking it out.
Yeah.
So why take the
Right.
risk of if you're going to go and use your bare hand?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I cycle mine down one step further than you do because once they get past the lowest level, I put them on the spades on the ailerons of my wing.
Yeah, do you do
Sorry, I didn't put it there in
that? You
time
did. You do
to.
that? Yes, he's talking about like right about the same time I had my hand all the way up there. He said, "Whatever you do, don't turn around." And I said, "What?" And those spades go right into your forehead, it turns
Oh
out.
yeah. There's those who have, and then there's the Cessna people who have the little diamond right there.
Yeah, well,
Yeah,
it's a party trick.
it's part of learning the deal. It's all part of the deal.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the rest of your plane and cleaning everything else there, there's a couple different things. I want to do a quick shout out to a very good friend of mine and someone you can learn a ton from. If you happen to be someone who is in the area right now that you can see, they've got a coverage area map. It's Mark Rubin. He's the CEO of New England Aircraft Detailing. And if you're in that his zone, which is the blue here, then certainly reach out to him directly. But otherwise, we want to take some lessons that I have always learned from him. He does a fantastic job of, and that's his crew. He's there on the left. That's Mark, and some of his team
And
that go
I
around.
bear witness to how well he's treating you and how what a good job he does and how nice he is to you. So I think
He
that's
does this to
fantastic.
everybody. He really does. There was some paint overspray that got onto my plane somehow in a hangar, and I was so worried about how am I going to get this off, and you could just feel it. And he is like, "It's no problem. I'm sending someone. We'll take care of it. Doesn't even cost
That's a
much."
pretty
He's
broad
like,
coverage area that
"Yeah." He's like,
covered that
"Well,"
whole
he's like,
area.
"If you can wait till next week, it's going to be gone. It's
Wow.
nothing." And
That's
he knows how to
great.
get off windows without scratching. So whatever you do, don't risk such an expensive paint job, such expensive glass on your plane. And consider using a professional because I think the first step is getting to a really good finish, even if you've got an older paint job, even if it's not perfect. The idea that you can use increasing grits or abrasive levels. So you start at the most mild that you can find, and then you only step up when you absolutely need to, but get yourself to a smooth surface.
So tell me, what do you
Yeah.
use on your window? What do you use on the fuselage? What do you use for
So
getting them?
that I asked Mark about, and he personally uses a brand name called Real Clean Products. They make something called a mobile aircraft detailing kit, where you can get a bunch of different things. But he also said that's not like the only brand you can use. Use something that is absolutely safe for aircraft, made for that, because again, why not? And it's going to be safe. You're not going to be damaging it.
Yeah,
And
yes.
prep your surface. Get your surface as smooth as you possibly can. And then the next step is protecting it. It was a bunch of years ago, Mark came to me and people have been doing ceramic coating on cars and all this. And he convinced me, he said, "You need to do this to your plane. It lasts over 5 years." He said, "You need to do this." And so I did it. And they first prep the surface, and then they use a product themselves called Sapphire V1 as their ceramic coating. And I have to say, one of the best investments. I mean, bugs, just like you'd spray just a tiny bit of windshield cleaner anywhere with this bugs or even water, and they just wipe right off. Like
Yeah.
everything just comes right off. So I found that to be a ceramic coating to be just a godsend. It just changes the way you keep your plane clean
Okay.
moving forward.
Yeah.
He also explained to me that they also now have other products too. I mean, Rejects has been out there for a while. It's not a ceramic coating. There's another product called PermaGuard, which is not a ceramic. It's actually a poly type product. It doesn't last as long,
Yeah.
but there are people who don't like putting ceramics on Cirruses. There's some and fiberglass aircraft. There's some anecdotal evidence. I have not experienced it myself, and I have not heard of someone directly that we knew that was causing it, that have said that ceramics can cause a little bit of static noise
Oh, really?
for by having that coating. I'm not sold yet that
Okay.
that's true, because a lot of bad grounds can cause that. A lot of
Yeah.
things. It might maybe it exposes a weakness. I'm not sure. So you can do something like PermaGuard if you don't want to do a ceramic. We'll see whether people go, "Hey, ceramics are a really big deal or not," but
Yeah, interesting.
that
Can you
might.
use, I saw an interesting question in the chat pop up there. Can you use Rain-X on plexiglass? Do you know?
I remember reading somewhere. You should, well,
Is this
read the bottle. Someone has told me that
okay?
you can, but I'm not a fan of coatings on
Yeah,
that.
makes
I
sense.
prefer
It's
to
getting
use
fuzzed
a
off.
regular polish, like
Okay.
keep it as simple as you can.
So I use just like Plexus.
Yes, I actually have probably two or three brands. I haven't found one
Okay.
to be especially different than any of the others, as long as they're aircraft ones.
Right.
But keep in mind, there's a difference between a cleaner and a polish. If you're one of the ones that uses kind of blue can, green can,
Yeah.
there's a difference. And don't just interchange them all the time. One is for cleaning, the other is if you want to polish. You don't want to always be polishing.
So yeah,
Do what makes
it's
sense.
actually removing the little surface, isn't
That's
it?
a little
Yeah,
bit.
okay.
I recommend using the right thing for the job.
So don't use
And
compound.
also, well,
Rubbing
so
compound.
clean first. Yeah, don't use a rubbing compound.
You have a foggy window after
Yeah. So
that.
those are my kind of clean the outside tips, again, from Mark. And you can learn more. You can reach out to him again, New England Aircraft Detailing dot com.
Yeah, very cool. I have a guy that cleaned my airplane when I was in Southern California. He made this stuff. He called it Pilot's Halo. I just want to give him a little shout out because
Yeah.
I love this stuff. You saw me use it today. It's pink. It's got wax
Well,
in
use it
it.
just for
Yeah, right? It's Happy Mother's Day.
that.
A little late. But anyway, so you shake the can, the bottle. It's a squirt bottle and it's pink and it's got, you see the wax settles at the bottom. So you got to shake it all up. You spray it on, let it sit for a second, wipe it. It does a beautiful job cleaning, but it also leaves a coat of wax, thin
Yeah.
wax, on wherever you do it. So look, he's on Facebook is where he advertises. He
Yeah.
makes it himself. He's in Southern California. If you're down there, give it a try. Pilot's Halo, I think, is what he
Yeah.
calls it.
One of the other things to consider is that it really is important to pick a system and sort of stick with it. If you're going to go with ceramic, there's a way to treat ceramic and deal with things like that. If you're going to do wax, old school wax, then there's a way to do that. If you're going to do a poly like rejects or something like that, each of those, they don't work together very well.
Yeah.
You're not going to necessarily hurt something. It's just you can't get a coating to stick on top of another coating that's incompatible.
Yeah.
And if you're ever going to be doing touch-ups, or if you plan to paint your plane, not the full plane, but things where you're not removing all the paint,
Yeah.
that can be a huge problem because you can't get the paint stick. You
Oh,
can't, you
yeah,
get
that
fish
makes
eyes
sense.
in it and stuff like
Oh,
that.
wow.
I've seen people
Fish
try to
eyes?
do, yeah, that's when you put paint on and you get little
Oh.
circles that come up where it sees a little spot like
Oh,
of oil and it kind of
wow.
spreads out. That's called fish eye.
Wow. I see in the chat people talking about the aircraft, the Simple Green made a cleaner for aircraft.
For aircraft, don't use any of the
Yeah,
ones
don't
that
use it.
aren't. Yeah.
I've tried it. I like it. I just kind of use it on the interior and then for getting some of the
Yeah.
grime off the outside. What
Here's
do
what you
you.
don't do. Pledge. Let's get rid of that. The folks that do let I still see doing lemon. Come on, man.
No,
Seriously?
when I first got the airplane, the guy I bought it from had it and he gave it to me with the airplane. So I used it and on the window.
You know the
Like,
biggest
what?
reason not to do that?
No, I don't.
Guess what happens?
Jeff
What
Feinman said
guess
not
what
to.
happens when an off-the-shelf in your grocery store product changes their formula? Nothing. You have no idea.
Oh,
So you just don't
no
know. I
integrity.
guarantee that the liquid pledge or spray or
Yeah.
whatever it is that you bought today is not the same one from 10 years ago
That's
or
fair.
15 years ago. You just don't know. And
Yeah.
so this is your
Well,
plane.
that was a learning. Yeah, it was a big learning curve when I bought the airplane and the previous owner. So when you buy the airplane, the previous owner isn't the authority that you might think they are. So there's that. There's how do you get the oil off the bottom? What do you use to wipe that off with?
Well, you can use Varsol or some of these other kind of like solvents that are made for that. Yeah,
Okay.
you can. There's other things that you can
I
do.
use Hunter Lola.
Try to avoid what we. Okay, so
Is Hunter Lola bad?
in theory,
Yeah.
I would say many people may use the blue stuff on their planes. The biggest risk of using it if you're wiping it right off and everything else is it's 100 Lolet. It's full lead.
It's flammable. Oh, the lead,
It's
yeah.
full lead,
Yeah,
right?
don't be
100 Lolet
smoking
is
while you're
high
cleaning
lead.
the
We get,
airplane.
we don't have to worry about the debate about like what 100 Lolet's doing when it's getting burned in the environment and all the other stuff. Forget that stuff.
Yeah.
When you're talking about getting it on your skin repeatedly on a
Oh, that's
regular
good.
basis,
Oh, so
like
don't. I
right
always
up, like
That's how I top the
Oh,
tanks full. I stick my
yeah.
finger in. Should I not be doing that?
When I'm saying that, we're talking lead. There's a difference between lead and lead exposure, right? Like,
Yeah,
please don't
okay.
do that to yourself. Like, try to
Wow,
restrict
okay.
your personal skin, breathing,
Because it
etc.,
never leaves your
contact.
body, is from what I
It never
understand.
leaves your body.
That's
Like
good advice.
it's bad, bad, bad stuff. And I honestly don't believe it has. We're contributing any massive impact to the environment with what we're doing in general with that. But I think that mechanics, I think people who are treating it as not a dangerous chemical
Yeah,
and
fuelers.
using it all the time and getting it on their bare skin and breathing it all the time. Oh,
So the
that's.
fumes have lead?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I used to love the smell of 100 low lead in the morning.
Well, there's a difference at a distance between going up there and going like,
Well,
well,
I
"I'm
smell it
fueling.
every.
How's that
No,
going?"
but I when I sample, I smell it because it has a very unique smell,
I
odor.
don't think a little whiff is going to do. Well, I
Oh,
mean, you
well,
are
if
who
you
you
do it a
are, and
lot,
that did it now, but
yeah. I mean, sometimes, yeah. I
yeah.
don't know. It smells like jet fuel. That has a different smell too.
Yeah. And someone said you might get a want a blood lead test there.
Yeah,
You can go in with the preschoolers for the state mandated one.
I don't know why the magnets keep sticking to
That's not lead, Brian.
Oh.
Yeah, you've been eating magnets since again.
Oh, you say that like it's a bad thing. Speaking of eating, is it dinner time yet? No, I'm kidding.
No, not yet. All
Oh.
right, so we've got that. We've got a bunch of other things. I want to do another shout out, which brought me just before I came here. We talked in one of our last, probably our last episode about autopilots. Is that our last one or the one before that?
It was one of the ones before this one.
Yes, exactly,
Yeah, I know
exactly.
that.
And I just want to say, I just came here from Autopilot Central. Alan and Susan Sparks run that. And I went out there to have a couple things done with the autopilot on Bonanza. So think about this. I've got a Sentry 3 autopilot.
This is a guy who couldn't
Yeah.
fix his altitude hold.
Nope. I couldn't fix it. I
Yeah,
couldn't fix it
wow.
at all.
That's amazing.
I decided to take it out there to them. So consider that the dates that are stamped on the autopilot components in my plane, 1974.
Wow.
Okay. 51 years. Try to get anything else that you have
I
bought
wasn't
in
even
terms of
born yet.
electronics to keep working 51 years later.
Yeah,
Right? And when this is working, this thing works like
that's
a
amazing.
charm.
Now you told me how that altitude hole works. Do you mind? Is it a simple enough
I
explanation?
will. I will. So
Okay.
let me just first say I was hitting up against this problem. I couldn't really quite solve it, and I started to question whether I needed to update my autopilot. I didn't. The only thing I didn't like was it when it the thing it wasn't working at.
I
When it was
remember you asking
working, I
me,
loved it.
would you put in a
Right.
$50,000 autopilot or
Right.
doing a
It was
$4,000 or
like
$5,000 repair?
trading was like $40,000,
Yeah.
and even cheaper autopilots at the end of the day, they're still like 20. I mean, when you
Yeah.
start looking, huge money. I decided to go to these guys who Autopilot Central, Tulsa, Oklahoma. They keep all these older autopilots running top notch. Their facility, you should see, they have reams of everything, all the old equipment. They know how to get this stuff going
That's
again.
amazing.
I brought it out there. In one day, they were like, done. You're all set. We've even test flown it.
And they
It's
even tweaked,
per
didn't they tune it up for you, do some
so they
other
found
tweaks for
things
you?
that were done wrong before. They
Yeah.
reset other things. They made it like, they got it perfect. It turns out it
Yeah.
was just, in my case, a broken wire, but they got it all tuned up like brand new.
That's awesome.
And
That's
I
like,
flew it here from there, and it has never flown as well.
that's nice.
It was
Don't you
spectacular.
wish you could fly that well?
I cannot. I
I can
can't go with
attest to
her
the
doing.
fact that you did. I made him do a level off today and it was perfect. It was just beautiful. An airplane he hadn't flown before.
Thanks for lying.
Yeah, no, no, he did a very nice job. So yeah, you told me how that altitude hole works, and I was fascinated by that. I thought that's actually interesting. I didn't know.
Yeah, so this might be interesting to folks the way that that all these I will say autopilots in at their core, the older autopilots, analog autopilots, right? We're talking before computers,
Yeah.
are actually quite simple. They always work on this basis of you start at kind of like zero voltage, and you go positive, and that causes something to either like turn to the right versus negative, turn to the left.
Yeah.
Altitude does the same thing. You start at zero or whatever your level is, and you increase the voltage. It wants to go up,
So
it wants
you're
to go
setting
down.
like a heading bug, you're setting a new zero
All
point.
it's doing. So
Just.
also is like 0 to 5 volts, zero to
Oh,
negative five
wow.
volts.
Yeah.
When you spin that, that's all it's doing. It moves a little point. And then
That's
it gets to
amazing.
the maximum, which
Yeah.
corresponds to your maximum bank angle that they want,
Yeah.
gets to that maximum, holds that maximum, flies there, and then as it starts to approach it, it starts to see the decreasing voltage. And they're just little wipers, if you know electronics or potentiometers. It's all this, like when you dial a dimmer switch.
So
That's all
simple.
it's doing.
Yeah, that's
And
amazing.
so that concept is used for almost everything. You want to do a course line, you want to follow a course, it's outputting the same stuff. You want to follow a GPS
It's
course
just a
instead of
change
following a
of
heavy
voltage,
current.
the more off you are.
Same thing.
That's
You want to
amazing.
switch on GPSS, it just says, oh,
Yeah.
we're going to emulate that.
That's amazing.
We're going to pretend it's a heading bug. That's what GPS steering does. We're
Yeah.
going to pretend that it's a heading bug. And we're just going to say, if the course line's over there, we're going to output that maximum to turn. And when you get close to it, we're going to pretend you're on it.
Go
So,
that. Oh, okay. And then correct when it
because
drifts.
it's just doing the voltage.
That's
So
amazing.
you asked to get to your question. I want to put this kind
Yeah.
of like baseline up to you asked about like how does something like altitude hold work? Well, it's the exact same concept, and I found it fascinating because I got to see it. And that is, it has this can with a bellows in it. The bellows is just like what your altimeter is. If you've never had a chance to look inside an altimeter, go to your airport, just unscrew yours, take it apart yourself. Just like,
Go to
go
Oshkosh.
online.
You buy it used
Like,
at Oshkosh. Yeah.
no, open up. It's got a
I
little can,
was getting ready to
right?
do it.
Like a little crinkled
Yeah.
can that kind of expands and contracts,
Yeah.
right? It's
Like
a
an
bellows.
accordion.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's like an accordion. And it just moves with that. So what they do is they have this with this can with a little probe that comes off the end, and when you turn it on, and underneath it is kind of like the dimmer. It's the wound wire of increasing resistance,
Okay.
you know.
Yeah.
And what it does is, at the time you turn it on, a little fork comes down and just grabs that point in the potentiometer and says, "Okay, you're now zero, wherever
Okay.
you are." And now the bellows comes in and moves it a little up or moves it a
You get
little
a
down
positive or negative at
and
that
gives
point.
you the positive and negative
That's
from
amazing.
that point.
So
That's it.
simple.
That's like all of this.
Yeah.
It's just you hear a click, it goes down, it just feels that point and gives you a little bit. It would be like zeroing out your altimeter at that moment and saying, oh, every time it goes up, we're going to adjust and down every time.
Yeah, so that's what made me realize if you don't have a local altimeter setting and you're flying from, pressure changing, it's just going to be keeping that basically
Yes.
that barometric pressure.
Which is what ATC wants you to do, right?
Yeah.
If they don't give you a new altimeter setting,
Right.
they want you to go from here to here and you're at a different altitude.
Yeah, you're at an actual different altitude, but it's where all the other aircraft are also. So it's about not hitting other airplanes and being at the same pressure as the other altitude, the
See,
other
I'm
airplane.
fascinated with seeing the inside space. I
Yeah,
was a
that's.
kid that, like,
I
when
don't.
my years ago, my grandfather, when I was really little, got one of those little electric cars back when they
You
were
took it
like
apart.
rare.
Yeah.
First thing I did, take it completely apart. And I'm like, oh my God, you like
Yeah.
everything, because I
I
completely.
had a tape recorder and I took that all apart. Got put it back together again,
See,
too.
we're birds of a feather.
Cassette tape. The problem is I didn't advance on to being able to fix things.
Oh,
Like,
well, I fix what I break. That's
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, you did a good job. He fixed a couple of things while he was here too. My
You
useless box he fixed. We'll show you that on
next time.
the
Don't give that away.
yeah,
Not
I
yet.
won't. Next month.
The one last thing I just want to say about that, which that you brought up with the bellows. When I was at the Continental anniversary, I got to tour and see all the parts of an engine that are put together and the components that are put together that you don't usually get to see. Like, we're used to seeing pistons and connecting rods and crankshafts and cams and whatever. Like that we
Yeah.
get to see. But I saw an altitude compensating fuel pump. That's what I have on mine. And I
I
was
had
like,
no
what's in
idea.
this? I had no idea. And
Yeah.
there was this wonderful guy who was the one building these and checking them. And he said, I'll show you how it works.
Oh, that's
And he just
cool.
took it all apart, and inside, little bellows, exactly the
Really?
same
So it's like
as
moving a needle or a jet pop and stuff did?
exactly.
Is that?
All it did was just shift
That's
a little
crazy.
shaft that just changes the fuel level that was coming in.
Just the pressure moving
That's it,
that
just based
simple.
on that. It's
That's cool.
crazy, right?
But
I loved seeing it. So
yeah.
another shout
I
out to get
like
the
it.
Continental
Yeah.
tour.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I would like to do a continental tour. Is gonna have to get down there one time and do it myself. I'm not that far.
Oh, I can hook you up.
I
I got you.
like at Oshkosh where they have the cutaways of either a
Oh, yeah.
Ford minivan or let it be an engine or whatever. I just those fascinate me. That first of all that they could even cut it like that,
Yeah.
so flat and perfect. But I love seeing the inside of things like that because I'll
It
never
is.
take an engine apart like that. I mean, I did in college.
Yeah.
And I didn't get my MP. I decided riveting is what did it for me.
Yeah,
Riveting, you know,
riveting was too hard.
not going to happen.
You
No.
know what is cool? If anyone has a chance to, if you visit in Tullahoma, Tennessee, the Beechcraft Heritage Museum, they have an entire aircraft that is like cut away all over the plane, like everywhere.
Oh,
It
really?
turns out they were using this. This came from the factory. They intentionally made this aircraft to be used in legal cases so they could show and demonstrate every single system on the plane and how every single thing was made. And it's so cool
Wow,
to see.
that is cool.
Yeah.
Someone's asking, what was the name of the autopilot shop in Oklahoma again?
Autopilots Central. Alan Sparks there, just and Susan Sparks, and a shout out to Stan, who's this young guy that did this amazing work on the plane. Just they're just great. Like I
There,
believe in keeping if you believe in keeping old things going, and
yeah.
if you like the way it flies when it's perfect, then by all means, why not?
And I like that there are specialists in certain fields, autopilot specialists for this, and then air conditioning specialists for
Yeah.
that, and all the different specialists that really know their part of the airplane. And I firmly believe in that. Like, I would no sooner want to operate on somebody than I would want my surgeon flying an airplane.
Well, I mean,
Yeah.
think about it. I flew all the way from Boston to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Well, why? Because I didn't want someone chasing it and chasing it. And I'd look back at the logbooks with people just sending parts out and just, yeah, I think it's this, I
And
think
no
it's that.
regrets.
Yeah.
You saved a lot of
And then you
money.
get there to the people who really know it
Yeah.
and they know what it really is like that.
Yeah. The best part of that is you got to take a little side trip down here to DFW area.
To you, 100%.
Yeah. Very cool. And we got
Which
to go.
brings us to the end of the show now. Can you
Oh my
believe
gosh.
that?
Has it been an hour? Wow. That's
That's
amazing.
crazy.
Well, that's cool. We've talked about a lot of good stuff. And I would like to go in depth on everything we talked about. We can only give the tip of the iceberg. So.
Exactly. Yeah. But we'll do that next time. We'll talk more.
Definitely. I look
We
forward to that
absolutely.
next month.
So, in terms of what's coming up next here, after I get back up to my neck of the woods here on Tuesday, May 20th, oh man, this is going to be another fun show here. Robert Hayes.
Oh, yeah.
Ted Stryker of
Yeah.
Airplane the Movie.
Oh,
Please don't miss this show. He
surely you can't be serious.
is so wonderful.
He
He
is
is
super nice guy.
one of the nicest, I'll tell you. I've met a lot of incredible people from all walks of life, including, movies and things like that. He is one of the sweetest, most wonderful, giving guys, and the stories he has are fascinating. So we got
Yeah.
a special show on May 20th, and
And he's just like he was back then. I mean,
he
he's
is.
just exactly like that.
Awesome.
That
So
is,
we've got, yes,
yeah,
we've got our next
that
cockpit
will be a
decal.
special show next month. Yeah. Next Cockpit to Cal on June 10th. And then 2 days later will be the next shift show where I'm going to have Aaron Dabney. He's a fantastic and very experienced instructor, one who thinks a lot like I do. We're almost like kindred spirits as instructors. He runs a flight school down in Waco, and he's also a teacher at Baylor University, teaching. I think he just got promoted to like a full-time teacher in the aviation program.
Wow.
Super guy. We'll be talking about professionalism and how you can take flying seriously and be a lot safer pilot. A lot of good show.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, with that, thank you all for taking time out of your evening to join us here tonight on Cockpit Decal. We'll see you on whether it be the next week's show for Social Flight Live, whether it be on the next Cockpit Decal, or whether it be on the shift show. But we really, really do appreciate you joining us. Please help us spread the word to others so we can keep aviation safe and fun for everyone. And with that, for me,
Definitely.
I wish you all blue skies.
And thank you, everybody. Remember, two speeds, slow or screw up, go slow. Have a good night.
Good night, everyone.